Welcome to the Mark in the Morning podcast. Want to receive this daily? Search Mark in the Morning on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And a happy Monday to all of you. I'm going to run down the show as usual. I stuff it with full of a bunch of crap that we'll never get to, but we'll try. We'll make it a valiant effort in here. Matt LeBlanc is pissed. He wants his co-host on, I think it's Top Gear. He wants him fired. We'll talk it through. Kanye West has a video out called Famous. And apparently Taylor Swift is, quote, livid and horrified. I wasn't aware that you could be both. It's Shark Week. We will notably celebrate the top and bottom five states to raise kids. Match Game was on last night. Did you see it? Was it good? We have a text poll. We'll run by it. Three reasons today doesn't suck. Game of Thrones. We speak with an entertainment reporter concerning the show. Chick on the Street and her sister Amy will talk Kardashians today. Heatwave, 104 in the valley today. Prepare. This video of this baseball kid, I'll explain to you momentarily. We're also joined by John Ross Bowie. We'll come back and discuss with him. This is Mark in the Morning. Now, Gina is out on vacation, and so we had to try to figure out a way to put on shows and fill the vacant co-host chair, and this gentleman has joined us, John Ross Bowie. This is John.
All right, I'll remind you.
You got Siri, huh? Voice recognition on that thing is terrible. Look. Siri, can you recommend a West one?
I'm sorry, Bowie. I don't understand recommend a West a want.
See? Total crap. You suck, Siri.
Hey, don't talk to her like that. She's a lady.
Well, that weighty took high-res pictures of my junk last night for Craigslist. Waiter.
So, John, how are you this morning?
I'm great. Top of my game. What an awful, awful way to start the morning with that horrific clip. Wow. I'm taking off. You know what?
John plays physicist Dr. John, Dr. Barry Kripke on CBS The Big Bang Theory. So, first of all, thank you for getting up early. You realize we're not paying you for this.
I am aware of that. Yeah, I do it for the love. And I'm pretty sure you guys are a nonprofit, right? So I think I can write this off.
Hey, we're not getting paid either. So now, what did you spend your weekend doing, John?
I spent my weekend, since you asked, I spent my weekend in Mortal Kombat with my children. Yeah, it was that kind of weekend. There was just the kids were in that space. They're 6 and 8, and they were in that space where nothing's good enough. And it was a pretty constant struggle. We actually went down to Manhattan Beach yesterday, and it was just a little too cold down near Manhattan Beach. And kids got irritable, and then I got irritable, and then the missus got irritable. And it was one of those evenings. It was one of those days where the only thing you can do is come home and unwind with Game of Thrones, which is appallingly violent. But was a nice little chill after a rather hectic day.
Which I want to get into Game of Thrones in a minute.
Eagerly.
I've got a story asking the question, are video games addictive? Now, I was born in 55. So by the time video games came out, I was
You're
an adult
in the workforce.
Into my career.
Yeah.
I was. But I will say this. I'm a huge horror fan.
Yeah.
And somehow I got my hands on a computer game, which was trying to save the girl who was trapped in Dracula's castle.
And
you had to work out problems before you could move into the next room.
Yeah.
And so based on, because this would be me, John. This was back in the Mark and Brian days. I get up at 4.
Right.
And so, you know how some nights you just wake up at 1 and you try to figure out a way to go back. I would lay in bed and I would say, if I got up right now, I could play the game for 3 hours before I go to work. So I just based on my one experience, it was ridiculously addictive. And I realized I don't need that in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be a bit of a time suck. I think there's a certain emotional addiction that comes with that stuff. I'm watching my son. We try to limit his screen time, but he dabbles a little bit in Minecraft. which is a rage with the kids. Mm. And just to sort of test things out, I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to, just to be a responsible father, I'm going to download Minecraft on my phone so I can figure out what it's about. Cut to 3 weeks later, I'm like, well, let me see here. If I put a second level onto this house, I can then have a view of the pig pen that I set up across the meadow here. And I wonder if there's any way to make an elevator. You know, it's just, it's fascinating how easily you get sucked in. You know, you pace yourself. Moderation in all things, I say.
Of course, including moderation.
Yes, indeed.
So now we had Kevin McHale. He played Artie on Glee. He's a buddy of mine. And he came on and he talked about Game of Thrones so passionately. Obviously, there's naked people.
Sure.
But he says the writing is better than he's ever seen on a television series.
It's a really fun show, and there's moments where I can't tell if it's the writing or if it's just the great British actors who are delivering the writing, but it takes these crazy situations, and you get very invested in it. You know, is Daenerys going to get her dragons back? And I mean, yes, obviously, it's easy to criticize the show as Lord of the Rings with boobs. Fair enough. But then again, is that such a bad thing?
Now, was last night the last of the season?
It was the last of the season, and it was, the show has this amazing ability to, it does revenge porn better than anything in the world. There were a few characters, without giving any spoilers away for those of you who have DVR'd it and not gotten around to it, it disposed of a couple of characters last night in a fashion that was so satisfying that I started to really wonder about my own mental health. Is there a part of me that is psychotic that I'm enjoying watching blank get his/her comeuppance so violently? Should I talk to someone about this? Who hurt me in my childhood? It was pretty crazy last night, but fun and beautifully shot too. I mean, it looks great this season. It looks like a movie. All the money's up on the screen. There were a couple shots that were as good as anything you're going to see in the cinema. It's just a great looking show, and whether or not the dialogue is actually good, it sounds great coming out of these actors' mouths. It was fun.
I haven't seen it. I'm going to have to start watching it because I love me some revenge porn.
Now, the name soon to be heard around the universe is Mr. Mike TV. You love to watch TV, Mike?
You bet.
Yeah, I do, and I was watching Jimmy Kimmel Live on Friday, and he had Kevin Nealon on. Kevin, kind of a funny guy. We never know if he's serious or not. Always trying to pull a fast one by people. But if you ever get Kevin in your home, you might want to take this part serious.
It's embarrassing when you're at somebody's house and you have to use a bathroom. Well, I keep asking, can I use the bathroom real quick? That's what people say. Can I use the bathroom real quick? It's always really quick.
Right.
Can I use the bathroom real quick? Can I use the bathroom real quick? And I'm thinking, don't go too quick. Don't get messy in there. I have to clean up after this.
Here's what you don't want to hear. Can I use your bathroom? I'm going to be a while. You got any magazines or newspapers? You got Sudoku? I don't care if you filled it in. I'll check your work. I'm going to be in there for a while. Here's what I like to do. I like to go to the bathroom at somebody's house, like during a dinner party. You could do this if you want.
Okay.
I excuse myself. Can I use your bathroom real quick? And then I use the bathroom, and I come back to the middle of the dinner party. A few minutes later, I go, do you guys have a plunger?
Oh, man, I don't get away from my house, Kevin. There's your mic, TV.
Sit, Boo Boo, sit. Good dog.
So, it was pretty funny. When the Billboard Awards did a tribute to Prince several months back, they had Madonna come out dressed like Prince, and she sang whatever she sang. And the BET Awards sent out a note. I saw your tribute. Don't worry. We got your back. And it was last night. It was pretty freaking great. First of all, Sheila E. came out and gave an impassioned performance with about 50 people. It was and then she cried at the end of it. But then one of the best vocalists we have living on this planet, Jennifer Hudson, comes out wearing a hood and sang Purple Rain.
Purple rain.
So if you didn't see it, I suggest you seek it out. It's really fantastic entertainment. So John Ross Bowie is joining us. Now, John, he stars in The Big Bang Theory, but he's got a play coming up, and it's, quote, a play about the Ramones. When is that happening?
We open in about a week and a half. We open on July 6th. Point of fact, we were asked in, we were told in no uncertain terms by the Ramones estate that we could not use the word Ramones in the title. So we switched the title to Four Chords and a Gun. which is a punchy title, I think, that captures what the show is about, because it's about when the Ramones worked with Phil Spector, who is the gun in the title. It's going really well. I actually, after I leave here this morning, I'm heading up over to the theater, the Bootleg Theater on Beverly Boulevard, and I am I'm sitting in on tech rehearsals, because we have a dress rehearsal Saturday night. And then, yeah, we open the following Wednesday. It's going well.
Now, when John was in last, and it was the show that I thought he would be great in here as a co-host, he was shooting a pilot, and he didn't want to talk about it. But this guy who was involved in the insanity of the world of acting, your pilot got picked up.
It is amazing, isn't it? Yeah, it did. Speechless for ABC. We start shooting first week of August. And by the way, I love somebody working in radio telling me that TV is insane. Okay. physician, heal thyself. But yeah, we start August 8th. We got an amazing time slot between Goldberg's and Modern Family on ABC this fall. So
they're buying into it.
I think they're really behind us. Yeah, they seem really excited. I went into, they do the upfronts, which is when they announce all the networks announce their fall shows. And I was there in New York when they did the big upfront presentation, and the executive seemed really, really excited, and not in that sort of artificial executive, let's do lunch, pat on the shoulder sort of way. People seem really enthused about the show. So we'll see what happens. I'm cautiously optimistic. Most TV is you have to treat it like you're an oncologist. We're cautiously optimistic. Let's manage our expectations.
Dude, I had one of the most bizarre things happen back in 91. My partner and I, Brian, we had a television show on NBC.
Right.
And we had shot four or five of them, and we had to go to New York for the NBC announcement of the fall schedule at Carnegie Hall. Mm-hmm. So we flew in, we did our radio show, we crossed the street, took an elevator to the roof of a high rise where we got into a helicopter, flew across to another building, it landed, we got out, went down, crossed the street, and we're walking into Carnegie Hall. The guy says, follow us. We follow him. He opens this double door, and in this room are maybe 15 people. Those 15 people included Bob Hope, Johnny Carson, Jim Rutt. And I'm thinking, oh, wait, I'm supposed to be here. But it was surreal. I just wasn't ready for that thing to happen. And then we lasted 13 episodes and were canceled.
Such is life. I didn't have like the iconography of Bob Hope and Johnny Carson, but I was in a room in Lincoln Center for the ABC upfronts, and I'm always the first one wherever I go. I'm habitually early. It's not my worst quality, but it's weird when you're just by yourself with this massive plate of food. Second person walks in is Kiefer Sutherland.
Wow.
Who's doing Designated Survivor for ABC, and just sort of standing near him by the crudité. I was, what am I going to love doing Lost Boys? What am I going to say? it was very strange. And then more, Jenna Elfman walks in, and then Dr. Ken, who I actually kind of know, so we got to talk a little bit. But it was a very strange thing. And there was a sense of, like, I've crashed a party. But then you're like, no, wait a second. I, for however brief this moment is, I belong here.
The box office for the weekend, Independence Day Resurgence, didn't have the firepower to dethrone Finding Dory from the top of the box office. The sci-fi sequel had an underwhelming weekend debut of $41.6 million, while Finding Dory took in $73.2 million to keep it number one. The Pixar sequel has now made $286.6 million in 10 days. The Blake Lively thriller The Shallows opened in fourth with a respectable $16.7 million, and the historical drama Free State of Jones starring Matthew McConaughey premiered in fifth with only $7.8 million. John Rouse, Ross Bowie is filling in for Gina while she's on vacation. John, are you a fan of film?
I am. And I am a fan, not to be too much of a panderer here, of Finding Dory. I really enjoyed it. Saw it with my kids.
I heard it was great.
Oh, I liked it a lot. Yeah, my kids are, as I said, 6 and 8, so we're right in the pocket for that. But, man, when you, because I see every kid's film. I really end up seeing every kid's film. And I'm not going to talk smack here on the radio. Listen, it's a tough business. It's hard to get a good movie made. But when you see a good one like Finding Dory, it is a good feeling.
Of the last 5 years, two of my favorite movies, at least the ones that come to mind, are Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Great, great movie, yeah.
But the one that I could see every week is Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, I feel like you mentioned that last time I was here. Yeah, I love Fury Road. I thought that was a... there's more good ideas in a single frame of Fury Road than in most other movies all put together. It just is packed with great visual ideas at every turn. That Blu-ray is great, by the way. Do yourself a favor. If you're a Blu-ray enthusiast, the Mad Max one is just packed with good stuff.
It's so original. I had never seen anything like it. Charlize Theron she's bald. She has one arm. She's covered in grease and mud the entire movie, and she couldn't be hotter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, as it happens, bald amputee covered in grease is what I type into porn browsers. That's me. That's not everybody's thing, but... Sure.
Now, there was a big auction over the weekend, a lot of items. The one, oddly, that's not mentioned here is the piano that was Elvis's piano in Graceland. It was the piano he played, and they said minimum bid, $300,000. It is not mentioned, so I think they might have pulled it. But the big item that was the signature custom-made Yellow Cloud guitar that Prince often played on stage and in studio was sold to Indianapolis Colts owner and guitar collector Jim Irsay for $137,500.
That seems low. I gotta say, there's a part of me that says that seems low. A guitar that Prince played? I mean, that thing is... I mean, that's some Middle Earth stuff right there. I mean, that thing is imbued with magic.
You a Prince fan?
I was, yeah. Am, yeah. I got to see him. Remember he did those shows a few years ago at the Forum? He did a bunch of shows, and every ticket was $25. Yeah. And I was like, you know, let's knock this off the bucket list. And I went, and he was on one of his nights where he was feeling a little more deep cutty, so it wasn't a ton of, like, the huge monster hits, and it was still one of the best shows I've ever seen. I don't even think he did Little Red Corvette, and I still left there on a cloud. It was great.
Oh. Well, my wife took... four friends. I got them great seats. They wanted to go see Prince. And I think it was at the Forum, so it might have been the spread of shows.
Yeah.
And she said he was incredible. He was in a great mood. But she said, and she's not even a Led Zeppelin fan, but he left, show's over. He comes back for an encore, and she said he did Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin.
Wow.
She said it blew the room away.
Oh, my God. That must have been amazing.
Well, plus his, look, it was the Super Bowl, and Prince is going to play the halftime show. And
right.
It's pouring rain.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, there's no way that he's going to come out in this rain. Not only did he come out, he was wearing a do-rag.
Uh-huh.
And my favorite quote was, somebody take my pitch in this rain.
Yeah.
that was the single greatest Super Bowl halftime show I've ever seen.
And oh, John, it's untoppable. It's so great. That he does a Foo Fighters cover in that show. Yeah. That's incredible.
Best of You.
Yeah, he does Best of You, and it's gorgeous. I didn't even know I liked that song. And he tears it up.
Well, when Prince passed away, I was a gigantic fan, and I went through that first, because I think he passed away on a Friday or maybe Thursday, but I spent that weekend after that just in my studio just watching and listening to Prince.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, go back and revisit that Super Bowl show when he threw his guitar. I mean, it was just, you got to revisit it because it's as great as it was when you first saw it.
the other big clip that went viral when he died was him at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony where they inducted George Harrison.
And My Guitar Gently Weeps.
And he owns that song to the point where, like, Clapton and Tom Petty are on stage going, yikes.
Now, as you know, Led Zeppelin was found innocent of plagiarizing the 60s band Spirit. Joining us now is Francis Malafy, the attorney who sued Led Zeppelin. Good morning, Francis.
Hi, how you doing?
Really good. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Now, so we know that Led Zeppelin was found innocent of these charges. What happened in your mind?
I mean, look, we were able to prove two-thirds of our case. The trust had the ownership of the copyright. We were able to prove that Jimmy Page and Robert Plant both had access to Taurus, but we were never able to play to the jury the very Taurus that Jimmy Page and Robert Plant had access to. I mean, it's absolutely frustrating. We basically had to try this case in an alternate reality. It's bizarre, logically unsound. And so it's frustrating because the very thing that we were able to prove Jimmy Page and Robert Plant had access to, Taurus, was never allowed to be heard by the jury. So, I mean, quite frankly, you know, we had both hands tied behind our back in fighting a case that was, you know, to begin with, a David and Goliath type battle. So, you know, we were hoping to get a better result, but in light of the circumstances that the jury never heard, the very thing that everyone can hear online, or I'm sure you've had some comparisons done, the jury never heard that and never was able to consider that.
In the courtroom, the notes in question were played by a piano?
That's not entirely accurate. The actual composition embodied in the sound recording or the album recording of Taurus, or the way it was played live, was never performed for the jury. It was adamantly opposed by defense counsel. The court made a ruling excluding the actual album recording, the sound recording, the way it was played live, or any of the composition embodied on the album recording. So basically, we were stuck with comparing sheet music to fully produced Stairway to Heaven, which is, from our perspective, an apples to oranges comparison, which is, quite frankly, artificial and bizarre.
If you just joined us, we're speaking with Francis Malafy. He is the attorney who sued Led Zeppelin. So you're saying it may not be over.
Well, it definitely is not over. I mean, look, we have a very narrow and a very strong grounds for appeal. There's the big issue is that, you know, we were never able to play for the jury the very thing that we were able to prove that Jimmy Page and Robert Plant had access to. That's very frustrating because when you're looking at the court system or you're looking at justice, it's always about the search for the truth. And the jury never had the facts or the evidence to decide this case on the merits. You know, did Led Zeppelin win? Yeah, but they won on the technicality. And maybe they should be proud of that, but I know that I'm proud of my team and I'm proud of all our efforts and how far we took this thing. And you know, we're in the trenches fighting, we're going to continue to fight.
And you consider this to be an injustice?
Absolutely. I mean, look, you know, the jury discounted and discredited basically virtually every statement by Jimmy Page and Robert Plant as far as being familiar with Spirit, as far as being familiar with Taurus, as far as having the album in their collections, as far as them making claims that they never heard or was never familiar with Taurus. The jury said no. You had access to it. You know, your representations in the early 70s saying, you know, that you were basically touring with Spirit, that you opened for Spirit, that you appreciated Spirit on a emotional level, on a, you were a fan of Spirit, you had their albums, you enjoyed seeing them live. They discredited you know, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant's statements and rebutted their claims of access. So you know, the jury got past that issue. The issue that was hard, the hard bar, was substantial similarity. Why? Because the very thing at issue they never heard, Taurus.
Well, so, yeah, Francis, I spent a lot of time playing this comparison where it's Taurus at the beginning and Stairway at the end, and I don't know that there was a single person who heard this comparison who said, wow, that's really, really similar. And to be honest with you, the verdict for me, as I was surprised.
Yeah, well, look, you know, in light of the facts and the evidence that was presented to the jury,
they had a very tough job. I mean, I think they won the fine in plaintiff's favor, and on many elements they did. You know, they worked through that jury sheet. They were deliberating for 6.5 hours. You know, I don't fault the jury on this. I think we had a really good jury. And I think what came down to an evidentiary ruling, which was a little bit bizarre, arcane, and I don't think, I think really prejudiced plaintiff's case. So I think that's what it really comes down to. There's other things that made it difficult for plaintiff's case to be presented in the best possible light, time limitations and things like that. But it was the biggest news of copyright infringement case. You know, my team, bootstrapped and took it all the way. We fought hard, and we fought fair. We just got a bad ruling that really hurt us. So it's frustrating because, you know, the charity set up benefit kids in public schools who can't afford instruments. And every dollar that we would have received would have gone to charity, and that we can't see that goal through. So, you know, I wish I could have brought it all the way. I wasn't able to. I feel like we're on a 12 or 15 round fight, and, you know, in the end we made the distance but got a card pulled. And, you know, we're from Philadelphia, so we fight. And, you know, Rocky 1 was the better story, but he lost, right? I wish it was Rocky 2. But that's where we're at.
Well, Francis, thank you very much for the time. Very interesting.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, John Ross Bowie is with us. He is a star in The Big Bang Theory, and he has a lot of good stuff that we talk about. I'm not sure if you saw this video footage, John, but imagine how frightening this was. It was a Singapore Airlines flight. It took off. They then, something on the instrument panel said something's wrong. The plane turns around, lands back at the airport they took off from, and the plane catches fire.
Ooh.
Did you see? So,
no, I did not see that. That sounds awful.
The footage that we're seeing are from people's phones inside the airplane, and the wings are completely engulfed in flames. So the people have to sit on the airplane and wait for the fire trucks to come and luckily put out the fire.
And they did that, and everyone's okay.
Yes.
Or else we're probably not talking about this on a morning zoo show. that's nightmarish. That's I'd fill my pants. I'm going to leave it at that.
The video is so very frightening. So it's time to call for 5 seconds, 888-696-1003. Your chance to win how much, Mikey?
$10.
Everybody's talking about it.
$10.
Ooh. Now, John, this is basically a game we play every day at this time. Everybody's talking about it. I'm not sure if you've been near a water cooler, but if you are, everybody's chatting about this game. Here's how it works, John. Yeah. We have one question that I ask the person. They have 5 seconds to answer it. If they get it, they get $5.
Okay.
If they miss it the next day, the question is worth $10. And then you see where I'm going with
this? Yes, I do.
It's an incredible game, right?
Yes. Are you asking me? Do I get the question?
No, you don't.
Damn, I could totally use $5.
Okay, Jackie, where are we going?
Okay, line one, Sam from Indio.
Good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Turn this thing down here. Hello.
Hello, Sam. How you doing?
Excellent.
So, say good morning to John.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Sam.
What do you do for a living, Sam?
I work dispatch.
Meaning what? What exactly do you do?
Scales and trucks, things like that, in the contracting type of nature.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's good. It's a job.
It's a job.
God, his enthusiasm is infectious.
It just makes me want to go to work.
Mm.
So, Sam, are you married with kids?
Yes, married with kids.
How many kids you got?
3.
Ooh, how old are they?
16, 15, and 11.
Boy, you were busy. You going to have any more?
No, we're done.
Finished up? Did you go get your tubes tied?
No, not quite, but we practice the old nature way.
Oh God, that sucks. I did it on the air. I got a vasectomy live on the radio. If I can do that, you can just go get these things done.
I guess so.
All right, I'm going to ask you this question. If you answer it, you're going to get $10, Sam.
$10, awesome.
What can you buy for $10?
I can buy a couple lunches.
A DVD? Couple? Yeah, DVD would be right, and it's one lunch, I'm guaranteeing. Okay, here we go. I'm going to ask the question. You'll have 5 seconds to answer it, Sam. Here we go. In what country can you find the source of the Amazon River?
The Amazon? The Africa?
It is not Africa. John Ross Bowie.
Am I to tell
yeah,
you? Well,
he's already lost it.
I see. Well, Africa not being a country, that's strike one. Strike two. It would be in South America. I'm gonna guess. I'm probably wrong about this. Argentina.
Mikey, do you know it?
I was gonna say Brazil. I know it might go between the two countries, possibly.
It is Peru.
Oh.
Sam, I enjoyed talking with you. Call up here any time. We continue with John Ross Bowie momentarily. All right, so this is kind of funny. There is a Billy... First of all, this made me giggle when I read it this morning at 5. There is a Billy Joel tribute band. They're called Big Shot.
Oh, man, I wish you'd give me a chance to guess. The Zanzibars.
And... what's funny is that the tribute band mostly consists of the musicians that travel with Billy. So they were doing a show in New York over the weekend, and guess who shows up?
Yep. Randy Newman.
Billy Joel.
Oh, I should have figured that one out.
And he did a Stones tune. So here's what I dig the most. You've got a Billy Joel tribute band. Billy Joel shows up, and they do the Stones.
Well, that's layered, man. There's a lot going on there.
They actually did three songs. They did Big Shot, Billy Joel's song, Big Shot, the band. And I believe a Beatles song. I can't remember. Was it All You Need Is Love?
Oh, really?
That's what they did, yeah.
My wife, who's listening, actually, and I caught him at the Hollywood Bowl a couple years ago. Terrific show. Had a great time. Really the fun set, some deep cuts, all the hits you came to hear. Really, really, really a blast.
You know, I've told this story so many times I can't go through it again, but I will. I was at the Greek to see Elton John, and Elton threw an hour-long hissy fit.
About?
His piano wasn't right, and he would bang it with his hands and stomp off the stage, and the techs would come out and do something to it, but it was never right, and he was just... pissed off the entire night. And as miserable as it was, I've told this story 1,000 times because who gets to witness
an Elton John hissy fit? Yeah.
I mean, it was just awesome. And Mikey, this is funny. Guns N' Roses began their stadium tour Thursday night in Detroit by doing something shocking. They were actually early.
What? No way.
They were due to hit the stage between 9:45 and 10. The band came out at 9:43.
Pot roast must have been ready earlier.
They are, John, I don't know if you know about Guns N' Roses. They are notoriously...
not known for their punctuality.
No. Well, it's Axl, usually.
Yeah.
Mikey, what's the longest you've waited? Because Mikey is a gigantic Guns N' Roses fan.
3.5 hours was the longest.
What? How does that happen? How do you not? Come on.
All right, here's the word that was given, is that Axl has to wait until he is motivated, when he's feeling it.
Heroin.
Heroin.
I mean, tomato, tomato.
Well, we lost us a Hall of Famer, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame keyboard player Bernie Worrell, who came to fame as a longtime member of Parliament Funkadelic and then became a de facto member of Talking Heads, passed away Friday. He was 72. He joined George Clinton in 1970 to build the funk collective, ultimately known as P-Funk.
A good evening. Do not attempt to adjust your radio. There is nothing wrong. We have taken control as to bring you this special show. We will return it to you as soon as you are groovy.
We'll return it to you as soon as you are groovy. George Clinton, the head of Parliament Funkadelic, was asked the question, because Parliament Funkadelic were two separate bands, but it included the same members. And George was asked, what's the difference between Parliament and Funkadelic? And he thought for a minute and he said, Funkadelic gets more tail.
phenomenal.
Now, John Ross Bowie is in with us. He is one of the stars on The Big Bang Theory. He has a new pilot coming. It was picked up. It'll be on this fall on ABC. We'll talk more about that. Now, John, I don't know how social media you are, Twitter and Facebook.
I'm pretty social media.
Okay. I just can't do it.
Okay.
I'm not built. I don't understand it. Now, my wife is really the social media animal for me. Now, we're going to celebrate 4th of July here on the lake, and we take it very, very seriously. 10 people are coming. We went down to South Carolina and bought a carload of fireworks that we're going to launch on the 4th of July. So to get the
fireworks... In the car. Leave them in the car, and whatever happens, happens.
So in the need to get all of these fireworks down by the lake where we're going to shoot them, mm-hmm. we went and bought a Red Flyer wagon, a red wagon.
Adorable.
Yeah, and it says minimal putting together. And I open up this box, and there are 10,000 pieces. And I'm not a guy with tools.
Yeah.
But I lay them all out, all the parts. I get the tools that I need. And Linda, my wife of 34 years, goes, we're going to Facebook Live this. So she Facebook Lives the hour that it took me to put this red wagon together. As of 6 o'clock this morning, 12,594 people sat for an hour and watched me put a wagon together.
Wow. That's like a French film from the 60s or something. That's that's a patient audience you got there, friend.
I said while we're in the middle of it, and Linda's telling me how many people were watching it, I said, how is it that you have time in your life to sit and watch an old guy put a wagon together?
Are we saying old? Okay.
60.
I think people want to connect. And, you know, maybe there were a bunch of people who were like, oh, thank God, if Mark's putting together his wagon, this is a chance for me to put together my wagon. And like 12,000 of them were just like, this is my opportunity to watch Mark put together a wagon and learn from one of the greats.
Now, one guy who was commenting on it said, the frustrating part for me is watching Mark do this because he's no good at it. I just want him to step aside and let me finish it. All right, question.
You know how I know you're gay?
How? How do you know I'm gay?
Because you macrame yourself a pair of jean shorts. No,
there have been lots of studies conducted about video games. Are they good for you? Are they bad for you? The American Medical Association wants more studying. The group stopped short of calling them addictive, but wants researchers to poke around some more to help decide whether video game addiction should be designated a mental illness.
Huh.
Now, you spent the better part of your weekend playing video games,
Mr. Bowie. I don't know that I went that far, but I tried to understand Minecraft mm-hmm. in order to connect with my son on the matter. And I've just happened to have gotten much better at it than him. That's all. I mean, this isn't a judgment thing. Just, you know, it happens that my stuff looks cooler than his. Whatever.
Now, John, I know that you're not an NFL fan, but I found this pretty interesting. The tight end for the New England Patriots, Rob Gronkowski.
Sure. Yes, I know the name.
Okay. He has five brothers. When Rob was drafted, their entire family, including their mother, got in this huge circle, and they started just kind of routing around. And these five brothers fought all the time. And he says there were only two rules in their house. When fighting, they would never stop the fight. When fighting, there was no hitting in the face and no hitting in the junk. Other than that, anything went.
Five brothers, you said?
Yep.
Wow. That's just a lot of boys. I have one boy who might even be listening right now, and the idea of five of him is challenging. That's a lot of boys. That's a lot of testosterone for one household.
My daughter, Amy, whenever she comes and visits, she pulls out the big plastic box where we keep all the family video from when they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And she pulls out a tape, and she puts it in, and we're all watching it. And it was Matt, who was probably 10 at the time, Amy, who was maybe 7, Katie, who was 4, and we're all sitting in the kitchen. Linda was preparing something, and I'm sitting there in the kitchen. And it was so loud. How it is that I stood it when you're in the middle of it? Because young kids, they're loud.
They're loud. Yeah, they project really well. And then it's amazing. Apparently, they get incredibly quiet when they're teenagers. And I look forward to the sullen years. I'm not lying to you.
Now, you've got two. Did you say 6 and 8?
6 and 8, yeah.
Do you plan to do more?
No, we're done. I'm not necessarily, surgically securing that, but we are done with two. This is not Salt Lake City. I have made my point. I've got one of each, and they're awesome. And I want to lavish them with all the attention I can. And also, I'm exhausted all the time.
We had the boy and the girl, and we were done. I didn't do anything about it, but we were done. My wife and I went to a dart bar, and we're playing darts with friends, and we're shooting tequila, and we're having fun. We wound up going home.
Oh, dear God.
Well,
can you,
I just
can you tell the story
way.
On the radio?
Yeah. Well, you met Katie.
Yeah.
That was at the end of a tequila drinking dart game one night.
Why didn't? Is that her middle name, tequila drinking dart game?
So, Match Game returned to television last night. Alec Baldwin is the host, and it's all celebrities. And we're wondering if you saw it, and if you did, if you liked it. We'll tell you about that in a minute. Right now, here's a clip.
Rosie's ready. What do you say, Charles?
That was way too quick.
It's a game show, Charles. We're not smoking weed out in Malibu right now. Playing the home version. What do you say, Charles?
Ball and bat?
Ball and bat.
Oh, honey!
It's okay, oh, Charles. It's okay.
Does he get a do-over,
it's
Alec?
Okay. Rosie O'Donnell.
I am sorry, honey. I said ball and chain.
Ball and chain. We were looking for ball and bat.
All right, so you can, we have a text poll up. Did you like it? 5 is the best,
yep.
1 is the worst. So you text that number to 281003.
Yeah, 1 if you thought it was terrible, 2 it was okay, 3 it's good, 4 good but not great, and then 5 if you thought it was great.
Okay, and right now it's 4 reasons that today doesn't suck.
1.
It was on this day back in 1968, Elvis Presley taped his now famous television comeback special. It was shown December 3rd of 68, and it was the most watched television show of the year.
I've never gotten over what they call stage fright. I go through it every show.
And I think of it every time I pass by. It's NBC right there in Burbank where he shot it. Good stuff.
And it didn't air for 6 months? They shot it in June and aired in December?
Yeah, it was a pretty big production for what it was, so it took a while in post, as they say. And at one point, this just goes to show you, Singer Sewing Machines was the sponsor, and when they saw the finished show before it aired, they said, "We can't air that. He's sweating. We can't." Apparently, they didn't have sweat happening at that time.
This was pre-perspiration. In our nation's history.
But they threatened to pull their sponsorship because he was sweating.
Elvis, what an innovator. I invented sweat.
2.
Kim Kardashian is 32. John, how do you plan to celebrate?
As I do every year on her birthday, going about my regular business, thinking very little of the Kardashians.
3.
It was on the night in 1969, following Judy Garland's funeral, police raid the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar in New York City. The outpouring of resistance to the action effectively begins the gay rights movement.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
4.
Today, happy birthday, Tobey Maguire is 41. I look for any reason to play this. All right. We have now the top 5 and worst 5 states to raise kids. This is based on economic, health conditions, education, and quality of communities. What do you want first, John? The top 5 or the bottom 5?
Let's do top five first, I think.
Number five, Connecticut. Number four, New Hampshire. Number three, Iowa. Number two, Massachusetts. And number one, Minnesota.
Minnesota's the best place, best state to raise a kid.
That's correct.
Interesting. Interesting. Freezing.
And your bottom five, number 46, Alabama, which I was raised in Alabama. Thank you. Number 47,
Nevada.
Well,
there we go. Proof is in the pudding, isn't it?
Number 47, Nevada. Number 48, Louisiana. Number 49, New Mexico. And take a guess on dead last.
Did we say Mississippi?
It is Mississippi.
It is Mississippi, yeah. Mississippi often wanders around. It's Alabama and Mississippi are usually in a dead heat for last in good things. And I all due respect to listeners there, and I've actually driven through both states, and they are lovely, but whenever it comes to, like, nationwide statistics, those two guys don't fare very well. They just, yikes.
I will say this. My wife and I were on a driving vacation. We drove from New Orleans up trying to get to Tennessee, and we drove.
That's a fun drive. That's actually a very pretty drive in parts.
I'm telling you, we drove south to north all the way through the state of Mississippi. It is gorgeous.
Yeah.
But if you want to know the real situation, just knock on any door.
It's really gorgeous, but don't stop and, like, go to school.
Now, we were talking about this earlier this morning with John Ross Bowie. He is a big fan of Game of Thrones, and last night was the epic season finale of Games. And our special entertainment correspondent, Todd Dennison, is on the phone to talk about it. Thanks for calling in, Todd.
A pleasure to be here, Mark, and I don't want to spoil anything about the episode, but let's just say it was one for the ages.
Nice, but what exactly about it is so amazing?
Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say somebody got some sweet, sweet revenge. But if you're looking for spoilers, keep on a-walking.
Okay, but can you just please be more specific, Todd?
Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say a certain character whose name rhymes with a different word did something that may or may not have happened. Or did it? I'll never tell.
Who was it?
I won't spoil it, but let's just say he or she has a face and said words and did things.
Is there a reason, Todd, why you're being so vague?
Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but let's just say a certain somebody accidentally texted his wife what happened on the episode before she had a chance to watch it, and he or she has learned his lesson. But I'm not saying anything else, Mark.
Okay.
And no spoilers, but let's just say a certain somebody who shall remain nameless is already on thin ice because he left his laptop open last week with a photoshopped image of his wife's sister's head on Kate Upton's body. And a certain wife of that certain somebody found it and cried for like 6 hours and was like, "Am I not enough for you?" And somebody whose name we won't speak replied, "I just wanted to see what it would look like. It meant nothing." But somebody's wife wasn't buying that. So keep this on the hush. Let's just say accidentally texting the Game of Thrones spoiler may or may not have been the nail in the coffin holding somebody's marriage, and I'm sorry, not going to spoil anything, but let's just say a certain somebody has something in his eye, and he needs a minute.
Todd, listen, this is a waste of everybody's time. I should move on.
Dear God, I'm going to move on. No spoilers, but that's what somebody said last night. I'm not going to ruin the surprise twist. But it's all falling apart for somebody. Everything's collapsing around a certain someone whose name is... Nope, I won't spoil it. Be strong, God. Things happen the way things happen, and no spoilers, but... Oh, God, it hurts, Mark. Somebody's hurting and in pain, but who could it be?
Todd, get it together.
And it's way too late for a certain somebody to pick up the pieces if his marriage falls apart. Because he may or may not have completely let himself go, and who would love him? Oh, dear God, Lord, hashtag spoiler alert. But who would love a certain somebody, Mark? Who? No spoilers.
Todd, I'm just going to wrap this up, okay?
I'm sorry. I really am. I sure hope I didn't spoil anything for you.
Well, no, you gave us absolutely zero information about the show, so don't worry, Todd, you didn't.
Okay, good. Because if I did that, I would feel so terrible. Like I imagine Cersei Lannister felt when she decided to let everyone...
Why would you spoil it like that?
Spoiler alert! I have betrayed you just like a certain somebody betrayed my wife. I am so sorry, my angel!
All right, so last night, Match Game returned to television. Alec Baldwin is the host, and we're asking, did you like it? 5 means you loved it. 4, it was good. 3, 2, and then 1, I hated it. Text your number to 21003. Now, John Ross Bowie is in. He is in The Big Bang Theory. And he, when he was on the show the first time, he had a pilot that he had just done. And it got picked up.
You
are on the fall schedule for ABC. Now, you didn't tell us what the show is about.
The show is called Speechless. And it's about a family called the DeMeos with a child who has special needs. And the child in this case is played by a young actor named Micah Fowler, who has... who has cerebral palsy in real life. He's incredibly charming, great actor. This is not his first gig. He's got a very reputable agent. And he is, it's a sweet show. It's a family show. Minnie Driver and I are the mom and dad, and we move our family to a better school district so he can go to a better school. So it's a lot of stuff about disability, but also class and family and marriage. It could be a really, really great show. I'm excited to get started.
Now, is it a sitcom?
It's a half hour. It is shot. It's a single cam half hour. So it'll look like Modern Family or The Goldbergs, which just happened to be what we're sandwiched between. Pardon me for dropping that in there, but Goldbergs is our lead in. It'll look a little more filmic than say Big Bang Theory.
Well, this is huge for you. I mean, you. Look at where they put you. Congratulations.
It's a really nice gesture of good faith from the network, and everyone's really, really excited about it. I mean, you know, listen, I've been down this road before. We could be gone in a week, but we will enjoy the moment while we are in it.
Now, did you create this? Did you write the script?
No. A guy named Scott Silveri, who used to work on Friends, actually, wrote the script. And it's a very personal story for him. His brother had special needs, and his family moved from lower middle class Yonkers to rather affluent Riverdale to accommodate his brother and get him into a better school situation. So anytime you're working with a script that comes that comes from the writer's heart, you've got to sort of handle it with care. But we're also in really good hands because he cares about the topic. He knows a lot about the topic. He's got this amazing writing staff he's put together of comedy writers with disability in their families.
Oh, wow.
And so the hope is that the show is smart, but not... maudlin or sentimental. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a really good show.
All right, so I want you on the show the morning that you're going to debut.
I think we could probably do that. Yeah, that sounds fine.
All right, let's talk this through. Something strange. Now, the trailer for Ghostbusters is the most hated video in the history of YouTube. And so now, Fall Out Boy has decided to cover this Ray Parker Jr., and it has nothing but hate connected to it.
Stop it. Stop.
But what's so bad about it, though?
It loses its, like, I don't know what it is. It's just not good.
All right, before we start talking about the purity of the Ray Parker Jr. original for a moment, I would remind everyone, hot on the heels of the Led Zeppelin case, everyone know where I'm going with this? That Ray Parker Jr. was successfully sued by Huey Lewis in the News for appropriating the bass line and saxophone riff from I Want a New Drug.
Right.
So before we're like, oh my God, the sacred cow of Ray Parker Jr.'s classic opus. Listen, I'm biased. I don't think you know this, Mark. There's no way you could. My wife is actually in the Ghostbusters remake. She has a small role. That's not a remake. It's a continuation. It's a spinoff. It's a reboot. My wife has a small role in the new Ghostbusters. I've worked with Paul Feig, the director. If anyone is going to pull this off, it's him and that cast. You know, it's hard to wonder if there isn't a certain degree of sexism coming after all these thumbs down votes. on YouTube, if it's just a lot of fanboys who are very upset that Ghostbusters legacy is being tarnished, as if Ghostbusters 2 didn't do a perfectly good job all by itself. And I realize I'm heading into very controversial waters for a morning radio show here, but I am firmly of the belief that we give the film a chance.
Look, I'm really intrigued about this because I've never heard such language as the most hated video in the history of YouTube. The bottom line of it is, if the movie comes out and it's funny, and if the jokes land, and if it's good, then all of this just goes away.
Yes,
but
exactly.
I really don't know that I've seen a more talked about hated movie before it even hit the screen than this one.
This thing got tons of hate before a single frame of film was shot. And that's telling, I think.
Well, I'm not sure when it comes out, but we will find out.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat.
So, Todd, the Angels found a way.
Yeah, they found a way, Mark, and they haven't been finding ways this season very often. But they did win yesterday. They beat the Oakland A's 7-6. They came back from a 6-2 deficit. Mike Trout, his 16th home run of the season. Yeah. 3-for-5 yesterday, hitting .313 on the season now, and a sacrifice fly in the bottom of the ninth inning gave the Angels a win. But, you know, the Angels are still 17 games out of first place.
Oh.
It's over. And it's not even July 4th.
No, not even July 1st, man.
That's right, exactly.
Terrible.
Yeah. Here's the story, Mark. How would you like to be a guy who's in AAA minor league baseball, and you get a call saying, hey, listen, we've got injuries. You got to come up to the big team and make your major league pitching debut. Well, that's what happened to Chad Kuhl of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then he gets to the stadium there, the ballpark there in Pittsburgh, and he finds out, well, who am I facing tonight? My first game ever. You're facing Clayton Kershaw of the Dodgers, okay? Well, Kuhl, in his Major League Baseball debut, beat Clayton Kershaw. The Pirates won 4-3. Kuhl had goes 5 innings, 4 hits, 3 runs. Kershaw gave up 4 runs in the second inning, including a 3-run double to David Freese.
Wow.
And the Dodgers lost to Pittsburgh. So, and Kershaw is still 11-2 on the season. But I'm going to tell you something, okay? That's cocktail party bragging stuff for his life. You know what I mean? For the rest of his life, baby. Yep. He's got that going for him.
That's some real tortoise in the hair stuff right there, man.
Who knows what's going to happen to Chad Kuhl the rest of his baseball career, but he's got that to talk about. Now, the Reds had a Reds Hall of Fame ceremony over the weekend. Pete Rose was inducted into the Reds Hall of Fame. Now, until just recently, he was even banned from being in that, but I guess the Reds talked to the commissioner of baseball and said, fine, if you want to have him in your Hall of Fame and you guys do it, you can do it. So he was inducted to the Hall of Fame. He had his number 14 retired as well.
Thank God. I had a lot of money running on that.
Exactly. What odds did they give you? You know what I mean? No, never mind. Chris Sale of the White Sox, 13th win of the season. His White Sox beat Toronto 5-2. And Mark Trumbo of the Baltimore Orioles, his 22nd home run of the season. He's the Major League Baseball leader. Hey, Mikey, what team did Mark Trumbo used to play for?
Angels. Yep. They got rid of him for Tyler Skaggs, a guy who's played 4 games in all the big leagues in the last 3 years. Yep.
Well, but you can't keep a young slugger like Mark Trumbo if you're going to pay millions of dollars for Josh Hamilton and Albert Pujols. So, you can't do both. So there he is. And by the way, the Cubs, who still have the best record in baseball just barely, have lost 5 of their last 6 games. So a little tailspin for the Cubs.
Hmm.
All right, moving on to the NBA now. Kevin Durant's one of the big free agent names, certainly. And he says he's narrowed it down to 6 teams that he will interview with for, signing with possibly. Now, one of them is the Oklahoma City Thunder, and that's who he has played for all of his career up to now. But he'll talk with them. He'll also talk with the Spurs, the Warriors, the Heat, the Celtics. And he just added in the Los Angeles Clippers. Can you imagine Kevin Durant with Blake Griffin? And CP3, Chris Paul. I mean, that would be something else. We'll see what happens there. And the Lakers, they say now, are really hot in pursuing free agent center from the Heat, Hassan Whiteside. Now, Hassan Whiteside averaged 14 points, 12 rebounds, and 4 block shots this past season. So we'll see what happens there. Now, soccer. Okay, Mark, Copa America the big soccer tournament for this hemisphere, meaning the Western Hemisphere, meaning North America and South America, for the geographically challenged people. Chile beat Argentina on penalty kicks, but the big news was after that game, Lionel Messi. And remember, I talked about him making that incredible goal last week, and I know we posted it on the Facebook page on the website. But Lionel Messi, best player in soccer, they say, in the world, announced after that game that he is retiring from playing for Argentina's national team. He's only 29 years old. He's the nation's all-time leading goal scorer in national play with 55 goals. He'll continue to play professionally for Barcelona, but he says, I'm done playing for the national team. I gave it my best shot. I could not bring a finals title, either World Cup or Copa America, back to Argentina. And, of course, he'll always be compared to Diego Maradona, the great Argentinian, who did bring a World Cup title to Argentina. But he's not going to play anymore for the national team. Golf, Tiger Woods says he is not sure if he's going to play in 2016. He says he's going to take it slow. He goes, I don't want any more surgeries. He's had 3 back surgeries in the last couple of years. So Tiger says not sure he's going to play in 2016. At this point, you know, you're halfway through, almost even better than halfway through. You might as well say, get ready for 2017.
Hey, Todd, I just real quickly want to hit a football note. I'm addicted, as you know, to the NFL Network. And
yes,
the NFL Network spends spring and part of summer announcing the top 100 best players in the NFL. They start at number 100, and each week they give 10 of them. Well, this past Wednesday night, the running back for the Los Angeles Rams, Todd Gurley, was announced number 22 best player in the NFL. I got to tell you, this guy is a stud, and he is going to run rampant for the Rams this year. So congratulations, Todd Gurley, number 22.
Yeah, number 22, and only his second year coming up now in the NFL. So lots of good years. Yeah, he's and he's the type of back, there's not too many of them, Mark, and you know this, that are capable of carrying the ball 20 to 25 times a game. He is one because he is a big back. There is no question about that. And it's day one of Wimbledon. Novak Djokovic won his first round match. He's the number one seed. Of course, he won at Australia and the French Open as well. You know, here's the deal, though, Mark. You know, they pay the winner at Wimbledon in pounds. And with the Brexit vote, it may not be worth that much when the 2 weeks of Wimbledon's over with. So these guys better cash their checks now. Hey, that does it for sports. Brought to you by Frontier Toyota in beautiful Valencia. Go see Joe Queso, Bob Corse, my good friends. And remember, the 4th of July savings have begun, and they're going now through this coming weekend, 4th of July. So get on over to Frontier Toyota in Valencia.
So, as you know, Led Zeppelin was found innocent of stealing from Taurus, from Spirit. And we talked to the plaintiff's attorney, who was pissed off and not in a good mood because he lost. Now, we're joined by two really smart people. And gentlemen, I'll tell you right now, I'm the biggest dumbass you're going to run into today.
Oh, no, well, come on.
We have Dr. Richard Brown, a forensic musicologist, don't even know what that is, and an expert witness who is consulted on cases involving infringement, and Jeff Kirchner. He has his master's degree in music theory and composition from UCLA. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Now, every time that I've played this comparison on the show, everybody goes, wow, that's really similar. That's really close. And I went into this trial thinking, they got a case here. But then in the trial itself, the judge did not allow this. It had to be recreated. And what did they recreate it on?
Both sides, the defense and the prosecution, actually the defense played on a piano. Dr. Lawrence Ferrara was one of their expert witnesses, and he played a variety of them on the piano. And then the prosecution, it was Alexander Stewart. He actually played on the guitar. Mm, yeah. Kind of what we're going to do here today with Jeff. He's going to show you some examples.
And that's really interesting that the defense played it on a piano.
Right.
The defense played it because, you know, Zeppelin on a piano is going to sound weird.
Yeah. Yes.
That's pretty telling that the defense used that as their first line of defense.
And that's kind of a strategy for defenses in these cases.
Yeah.
First off, to make it as confusing as possible for the jury. So they'll play all these comparisons, which we'll show you the comparisons, but also because you couldn't play the actual recording in the courthouse, they have to recreate this. And this is the quirk of the copyright law. It's actually because they have to go back to the 1909 copyright law because it didn't grandfather in these laws. And that one was recreated before there were even records. Nobody even really knew what records was going to be. It actually came about because of the player piano industry. Yeah. You know those things that rotate? They thought, the sheet music industry thought they were going to lose all their business. And that's how that copyright law was put together. They didn't even think records were going to be profitable. Huh. So only the sheet music, the actual stuff that you write down in notes and submit to the copyright office, that's the only admissible evidence in court for these old cases.
Right.
It was
all
the same thing for the Blurred Lines case, actually. Yeah.
So, guys, if the jury had heard this, the comparison between the two, just your opinion, would we have had a different outcome?
I think so. It would make our job easier, you know, as expert witness, because you just have to push play on the recording and say, what do you think, you know? But at the same time, the role of the expert witness is to really break down the music. So we talk about the harmony, the theory, and explain how they're similar. Actually, it's interesting, Vernon Silver, a reporter for Reuters, went around Venice Beach and was playing Taurus for people, and almost everybody said, oh, that's Stairway to Heaven, isn't that Stairway to Heaven?
Right.
Wow. I can't get over the piano thing. I was like, you might as well play Stairway to Heaven on a steel drum.
Exactly.
Just to make it not sound like Zeppelin. That is really, that's dirty pool, I gotta say.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay, so Jeff, are you going to share with us songs that are similar?
Sure, yeah. I mean, so we all know, this is Taurus, right? It does this thing. Now, the difference is Stairway to Heaven has a melody on top. It has this high thing. So you get that melody up high, right? And then they all end differently, right? Right? They all have these different endings. Okay, so there's other songs that do the same thing. For example, it's slightly different, but Michelle, the Beatles, starts off like this. Right, so it has a similar sound. Now these chords are not strange chords. These are very common. You hear this in a lot of songs. These chord progressions.
The example, I actually put a blog post up on our website, musicforensics.com. If Jeff Kirchner, budding young songwriter, comes up with this genius idea, he plays the chords G, C, D.
Right. So you have, if you have a song that goes like this, right? Right. You have.
And Jeff thinks, oh, I'm a genius, I've got this new song, files it as per copyright. He can't go out and sue John Denver for leaving on a jet plane.
Leaving on a jet plane, don't know if I'll... Or Wild Thing, right? So you get the same, that idea of the chord progression, you cannot copyright that chord progression. So you could do the same thing for, you know, this whole deal. So, you know... Gina was saying all week about Chim Chimini, Chim Chim Chiru, right?
And this is what actually Jimmy Page said this in testimony when he was on the bench.
Yeah, so you could argue, Chim Chimini, Chim Chimini, Chim Chim Chiru.
It's like magic, yeah.
Da, 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 da. They all have different endings, right? Mm-hmm. But those first four chords are you know... My Funny Valentine.
Wow.
Yeah. Sweet Comic Valentine. Or even... I look at you all, see the love there that's sleeping. You know, while my guitar gently weeps.
If you just joined us in the room, a couple of smart guys, Dr. Richard Brown, forensic musicologist, and Masters in Music Theory, Jeff Kirchner. We're going to continue this conversation. If you have questions for the gentleman concerning the Led Zeppelin trial or anything else musically based, 888-696-1003. So, with Gina being on vacation, we've got John Ross Bowie. I almost said Bowie.
It's okay. Very common mistake, particularly on classic rock stations.
And also, we have a couple of really smart people, which frankly makes me uncomfortable. We have Dr. Richard Brown, forensic musicologist, and Jeff Kirchner has a master's degree in music theory.
So we should call him Master.
Yeah. Master.
I've been trying to get people to tell me.
You're on Big Bang
years.
Theory. Remember, Doctor, Master.
Exactly, right? Exactly. I will, in turn, in real life, be referred to as Bachelor. Carry
on. Now, we're talking about this Zeppelin trial. Zeppelin was found innocent. And to me, it really... look, we have 12 notes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
12 notes. And it drives me nuts because we're getting into really murky water when we start doing this, even though I did think there was a good case here against Led Zeppelin because the notes are so similar.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, they tell people in recording studios it's smart for you to log all of your days, write down in notebooks exactly what you've done. So in case you do get sued, you can go into court with some evidence of, look, I made this up on my own independently, and have some evidence for that, because otherwise you'd be liable for a lot of infringement these days. So,
Now you guys, especially Dr. Brown, you testify in many cases for in trials like this, do you?
Well,
not?
These rarely go to court. This is a rare exception. Usually, what we're writing up are reports to the prosecution or the defense, our analysis of the music. Those go to the judge, if it even goes to a judge. But studios, publishers, they do not want these to go to trial because that creates precedent for more lawsuits. And it's even different. The Blurred Lines case, for example, the lawsuit with Marvin Gaye, that one was a jury trial as well as this. So regardless of the outcome, there's not a court precedent after these because jury trials don't create a precedent. But in any case, publishers don't want the publicity. They do. We do a lot of NDAs or non-disclosure agreements when we do these because nobody wants this to get out there, essentially.
All right, let's go to the phones. Jeff has called from Oak Hills. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Really good.
Good.
I got to be co-host last week and interview David Schultz with Mark. And I was bringing up the same point of there's so many millions of songs, you're going to have similarities.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if the magnitude of this case might change the outcome for future lawsuits to where nobody's really going to be trying that much anymore to sue over things that sound similar.
It's possible. The big thing here, the copyright law itself says that, you know, we talked about the idea, right? So GCD is just a chord progression. Anybody can do that, right?
Yeah.
What's important?
Let's hear GCD.
GCD.
Real quick.
Okay.
C, D.
Just three chords, right? Very so common chords.
You Good can write Lovin', La Bamba.
Yeah. Tons of songs. Written
tons of Ramones songs. Yeah,
every Ramones song. Yeah, we'll go that way. Yeah. The idea here, and this is what copyright law, it's not just for music, it's for everything, is that you have an original, it's called an original expression of an idea. So you take GCD and you do something to it and you make it unique. And that's the tricky thing with this chord progression, because it is fairly unique the way that it goes, especially those first four bars.
Yeah. And that's why and not judge, to mention that the, you know, 5 minutes following are pretty awesome too. So, which is different than Taurus, you know what I mean? So yeah, you might start with similar chord progression, but where Stairway to Heaven goes and the lyrics and the melody and everything, I mean, it's a different beast than Taurus, which is instrumental.
Yeah. So because of the copyright law, Dr. Brown, if somebody does have a claim and they make it to trial, will the original music never be allowed to be played because of copyright?
Only recordings that were filed for copyright before 1978, because there was a big revamping of the copyright law in 1976. And once that they got through all the legislation, after that point, you actually can submit the physical recording to the copyright office. So that's copyrightable now. Right. But these older cases like this, classic rock, a lot of classic rock, they have to only play the sheet music. You can't just push play on the record and say, are they similar? You have to play it on the guitar, and you can only play what was on the sheet music.
Which is chords and melody, basically.
Yeah.
And lyrics.
Let's go to Mike. He's calling from Glendale. Good morning, Mike.
Hi. Good morning, guys. My question was if the case was just based on the introduction of the song, because you're right, it totally different songs. But also, I know when you buy sheet music at a store, if anybody wants to learn how to play a piano or just play their favorite songs, everything's written in piano, even the melody of the singer.
That's true. And, you know, if you think about a lot of rock music or popular music in general, it doesn't really translate to sheet music very well. There's a lot of things, the style of your voice, the subtle things you could do with drums, and especially with music that has samples, how do you notate a sample into sheet music? That's for us, that gets really difficult. We have to come up with unique ways to kind of notate it. Sometimes we use little symbols and graphs and charts and things like that too. So,
Dr. Brown and Jeff, were you surprised by the verdict in the Led Zeppelin trial?
I thought it could have gone either way. You have eight people in a box. They may or may not know anything about music. And a big part of this is what we would do, the expert witness testimony, to go in there and to help explain. And that's a big part of the law, that they go through this called the extrinsic test. And that is the similarity of ideas as measured by external objective criteria measured by expert testimony. That's what that's what we're supposed to do, is to help guide them along. And, you know, it's like any case that goes to trial. Both sides present their argument, and then you have eight people that make the call. And with this one, it could have easily gone the other way, I think. So,
Now, your website is musicforensics.com. What will someone see if they visit?
I actually just finished a nice blog post on this. It opens up with that great moment from the Wayne's World, No Stairway.
No Stairway.
And you know what? That actually Led Zeppelin filed a complaint against Paramount Pictures. And if you have any version of Wayne's World since the theatrical release, they can't. He doesn't actually play Stairway to Heaven in the movie.
Yeah.
They can point to the sign that says No Stairway. You guys know this moment, right?
Yeah.
He's got his Excalibur, right? The 64.
Three notes. And the guy comes over and goes, hey,
grab the guitar. Yeah.
You know, I grew up working in a music store too, and we would actually go and unplug the power to the amps if you had one of those guys that was just playing. You know, come on, God.
I used to frequent a bar in the East Village where you could get kicked out for screaming Freebird.
Yep. Yeah. No, but if you're interested, I got a nice detailed blog post on this. It's musicforensics.com. Yep. And if you need any services from us, we offer a lot of it, and we're based in Los Angeles. So, yep.
Dr. Brown, Jeff Kirchner, thank you so much. It was hugely interesting.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
So great, guys. Mm-hmm.
Now, with Gina on vacation, John Ross Bowie is joining us. He's from The Big Bang Theory. He just had a new show picked up for ABC, and so he's in here co-hosting. But his show's going to be a big hit, and he's going to be a big star, and then he won't take my calls anymore, which is the way it happens.
That's correct. Yes, everything you just said is accurate.
So,
thank you for saying it, too.
Thank you. So, do you, John, consider yourself to be a Matchbox 20 fan?
What's the most polite way I can say absolutely not?
All right. I still think you can relate to the story.
Okay.
We had Matchbox 20 on the Mark and Brian program before they released their debut album, which was Yourself or Someone Like You.
Okay.
And when they were on the show, they came in and performed. At that time, the album, which was Yourself or Someone Like You, was named Woodshed Diaries. And I was given a test pressing of Woodshed Diaries with the artwork on the front, and all four members of Matchbox signed it. Okay. So years later, my son Matthew, who is a professional drummer, they were going to have a fundraiser for their band. They were going to have a yard sale.
Uh-huh.
And he said, all those CDs you've got out in the drum room, can I have some of those to sell them at the thing? I said, sure, just take them. At their yard sale, that test pressing of Woodshed Diaries, autographed by all four original members, sold for $1, and I didn't even realize it was in there.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh,
no. You know, it's funny. I read an article that Rob Thomas wrote years ago for, I want to say, Esquire or GQ, about his status as just recognizing that he was not a profoundly beloved musician. And I left with a great deal of compassion for the man, and it was a funny article. It was actually really self-effacing, and he was and it ended with him dissing Creed, the band Creed, by saying F Scott Stapp, that guy is my Rob Thomas. And I thought, you know what, Rob Thomas, I have been rough on you. Good for you, man.
So now tomorrow, Chick on the Street's going to be in here, and my daughter Amy, my middle kid Amy, she'll be on the phone. Katie, they're all about the Kardashians, and so Katie is going to be in here eating the Kardashian salad, and I'm going to bring up Kardashian topics.
Okay, hang on. I'm sorry. Not being someone who watches the show, the Kardashian salad is just like a regular salad with a great ass, or how does that how does that work? I don't.
Yes, that's what it is.
Oh,
John.
Splendid. Okay, great. Yeah. Okay.
So, Mikey, where are you? You've got to go pick up the salad, right?
Yeah, the restaurant is called, I think, Health Nut, and it's not too far from where I live. It's in Woodland Hills, so I'm going to pick it up tomorrow or tonight or today on my way home, I guess. And hopefully, I won't be embarrassed. I don't know if I have to order. Can I please get the Kardashian salad or how it happens? So I'm a little nervous. So I'm going to look like an idiot, but yeah, we'll see what happens.
All right. So the hope. Because when Amy and Katie start discussing the Kardashians, a fight will break out. I don't know exactly why it happens.
It's not the hottest of political topics, but okay.
No, my hope is that we get to hear a full-on sister battle right here on the radio, because it is hysterical.
Did we wish a happy birthday to the wrong Kardashian earlier?
Yes. Oh, that's right. Katie came in. I said M. Kardashian was 32. It's actually Khloe Kardashian.
I gotta text Kim and apologize. I feel terrible. No wonder she hasn't returned.
One day, I was coming back from the cigar store, about to take a right to get up to the hotel, and I'm stopped at a red light, and there's paparazzi everywhere standing outside this thing. Hmm. And right next to my car is a limo. And so I'm not a celebrity guy, but I'm forced to sit there because of the red light.
Sure.
And then finally, the paparazzi, they start pulling up their cameras and they're snapping them off. Here comes Kris Jenner,
right,
the momager, out of whatever lunch place she was in. She's walking right toward me. And then the bodyguard opens up the limo and she looked at me and smiled. I got smiled at by Kris Kardashian.
I'll take it. Sure. Why not?
All right. Your fan has called. Jamie is on the phone. Good morning, Jamie.
Hey, good morning.
How you doing? Here's John Ross.
I'm sorry, I can barely hear you.
You've called to say hi to John Ross Bowie. He's here.
Yeah, John.
Hi, Jamie.
You used to go to Tiago a lot, remember?
I used to go to where?
To Tiago in West Hollywood.
Which, I'm sorry, one more time with the name.
Tiago, T-I-A-G-O.
Occasionally, maybe? That sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
What do they do there?
I see you there quite often.
What do they do there, Tiago?
Oh, we used to serve coffee and a full kitchen also.
Then yes.
Used to grab
then
a coffee
yes.
There
then
quite,
yes.
Quite
Absolutely.
Often.
Yes, that is me. Okay, great. Yes, indeed, I did. It's funny. I was very disoriented when I heard my fan, Jamie, because that's my wife's name. And I thought perhaps my wife had called in. You are not her, however. But yes, I have had your coffee.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You and my wife have that
in common.
I
don't work there anymore. My wife works there now. But yeah, I remember seeing you there a lot. And yeah, I remember I told you I was a big fan of the Big Bang Theory. I still am.
Oh, that's nice to
Great
hear.
Great show.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, you do a good job.
I appreciate that very much. I will be by to say hi to your wife. That sounds a little more predatory than I wanted it to. I'm going to come by and say hi to your wife, Jamie.
Yeah,
I'm watching her right now.
Jamie, you're a gifted conversationalist, my friend. I'm glad I get to sit here through that. That was a lot of fun. Matt LeBlanc apparently is not friends with his Top Gear co-host. The actor has reportedly given the BBC an ultimatum. Either they fire Chris Evans or he walks. Britain's Sun says the former Friends star has, quote, grown increasingly frustrated with his co-star's rudeness and frosty attitude towards the team. The second season of the revamped Top Gear is set to begin filming in September, but it could be postponed while producers make a decision. A source says the big question now is who goes and who stays. Matt seems to have an advantage since he's been getting rave reviews on the motoring series. Do you watch the show, John?
I've seen it. I've not seen any of the Matt LeBlanc episodes, though. I think it's fascinating that he's taken over the gig. It's a huge hit in Britain. I mean, its influence can't be overstated. It's huge.
Yeah, no. I haven't seen it, but I've certainly heard about it.
Yeah.
You know, motor nuts, they dig that.
I don't know. Everyone I know who's worked with Matt LeBlanc, I met him briefly once. I did a few episodes of the show, and we worked together. We didn't work together, but he was on set. Super nice guy. Everyone likes working with him. So if you've ticked him off that much, that might be on you. Gotta say.
So I just wonder if, like, there was that quote where Matt LeBlanc was heard yelling, "I'm not Joey." Apparently too many fans had called him Joey.
You know, listen, I feel for the guy. I mean, I get just a fraction of people coming up to me and insisting I do the speech impediment while I'm with my kids. A fraction of what Matt LeBlanc deals with on a daily basis. So I am a little more sympathetic than maybe I should be to something like that. But I imagine if you're out with your kids and you've got randos coming up to you at the shopping mall going, "How you doing?" It will take its toll.
That wraps it for this Monday. Uncle Joe stands with us for a 10 at 10.
Oh, the 10 at 10 today, supported by AmcoSoCal.com, AABBPMCO, Amco Transmissions, and a whole lot more. Tell me your Uncle Joe sent you. Today, we're featuring the year. Well, what year is that year? I'm trying to think now. It's before auto-tuning, before digital manipulation. It's the year that Godfather came out. Does that ring any bells for someone?
70, can I guess?
Sure.
Yeah.
72?
Oh, you bring in a, you bring a ringer that knows these things. That just changes. That's right, 1972. Music from 72 today. We're going to have a lot of fun.
John Ross Bowie, I, you know, Gina's on vacation and you were kind enough. You were on the program promoting something and you were great. And I asked you to come in and host with me while Gina was out. You've never done this really per se in this. You came in here and spanked it. I couldn't have had a better time with you.
Oh, I appreciate that, Mark. You're one of the greats in this business and it means a great deal coming from you.
Well, I will make the call, but you'll be a big star and probably have one of your peons call me back. But I would hope that you would consider doing this again.
Mark, I will turn you down myself. There'll be no peon involved.
Tomorrow we have at the very funny Adam Ferrara back in the room and a professional polygamist, meaning she enjoys open marriages, Gracie X. Can't wait for that. Mikey!
Mark! A song I've never sung about you. You really got me, Van Halen. This is Mark in the Morning.
Want more Mark in the Morning? Live and in living color in Southern California. Listen weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 100.3 FM.